This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. If you caught the Perseids meteor shower last week, you were watching dust from the tail of the Swift-Tuttle comet, which came by many years ago, that dust falling into the atmosphere. And even though we catch glimpses of a comet every now and then, wouldn't we learn a whole lot more by visiting one? Well, last week, after a 10-year journey, the European Space Agency's Rosetta spacecraft did just that. It reached its target, a comet 334 million miles from the sun. Rosetta is the first craft to actually orbit a comet. And in the fall, catch this, its lander, the Philae, is going to drop down and anchor itself onto the icy surface of the comet and probe it. Claudia Alexander is the project scientist for the U.S. Rosetta Project at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Oh, you're welcome. Tell us about the comet. It has an interesting shape, but two different lobes, kind of like a rubber ducky.
You know, when the object was in the distance and very fuzzy, it just looked like a rubber ducky. I think now I like to think of it as a Monopoly boot. That's what it looks like to me.
The Monopoly. Okay. Whatever works, right?
Yeah, whatever works.
Well, what is so interesting about this comet? Why visit a comet?
Okay, well, visiting a comet is different from why this particular comet. What I'm going to say here now is that the comet we picked was more just pick one. You know, we needed one, and there aren't that many that are accessible in the plane of rotation of the Earth, so you don't have to use that much rocket fuel to get there, and you can plan ahead. So there's a real short list of comets that we can get to, okay? So we picked one, you know, that would get us there in a reasonable amount of time. But why would we visit a comet in the first place? Comets are left over from the formation of the solar system, and they are the travelers. The comet homes where bazillions of comets reside are way outside the solar system. You have the Kuiper Belt and you have the Oort cloud. Those are two places in the solar system that are enormous distances away that we could never get to in anybody's lifetime. So fortunately, comets are the travelers. They come to us. So we want to have a chance to explore these capsules, time capsules, up close and personal, and we just picked one that was coming nearby us that we could catch.
Now, I understand this was not your first choice.
As a matter of fact, it was not our first choice. We actually had a very small object called Comet Virtanen. That was our first choice. But the rocket that we were going to use to launch had a few problems in the lead-up to the launch. And our guys kind of prudently said, you know what, we're going to wait. We'll take the next rocket, okay? And we'll change our target and we'll change a little bit of the mission parameters. But you guys get that rocket fixed. And when you're ready, then we'll go ahead and launch our mission.
Mm-hmm. So you have it circling the comet. This is the first time anybody's ever done that, in orbit.
Absolutely
around
right.
A comet.
Absolutely right.
And I think what I would describe as the most fun part is yet to come. It's going to drop something onto the surface?
Yes, we're going to drop the lander on the surface. And, you know, this has been, the Europeans have kind of had this dream of being able to actually drill into the primordial material of the solar system and really take a laboratory to the target and do your laboratory right there on the surface. So this is, you know, an amazing challenge and a wonderful opportunity to really kind of get our hands on, in a figurative sense, but to get our laboratory utensils on what we believe is some of the primitive solar system material. And so we're very excited about this challenging landing.
Tell us what makes the landing so challenging. I mean, the comet is you don't know what it's made out of. You know nothing about it yet.
I mean, not only do we not know what it's made out of, but we don't know what its gravity is. We don't really know a priori. We did not know what its shape was. That's why when we finally did see this Monopoly boot shape, we were very surprised. So unlike a regular planetary exploration where you do your reconnaissance first and you get a good map of the, you get your gravity field figured out and you figure out what the internal structure is and you know what you're doing, we're doing the reconnaissance and the orbit in the same mission. So we have to do a lot of characterization of the target before we're going to put this lander down. So we've got to get our maps up to speed. We've got to know what the temperatures are on the surface so, you know, we don't land in a hot spot. And we need to get the gravity figured out so that we can do some of the experiments that we have in mind. So we've got a lot of work to do in the next 90 days.
You know, a comet's been described as a dirty snowball made of a lot of ice and dust on it. And then as it gets closer to the sun, it sort of heats up and gets a tail, right?
That's correct.
Does this have a tail yet? And could you actually be on the comet when the tail develops?
Yeah, that's the tricky part, isn't it? We would like to land before it becomes too active. In particular, we have solar panels, which we hope do not get covered with dust, because we need the power. If they get covered with dust, that cuts us off a little bit. So, yes, you know, we are kind of scratching our heads, hoping that we pick the right time frame where it's not too active. But we also didn't know if it was ever not active. You know, we've never been so close to a comet that we could say that it really never has an unactive period, because you could just say we just hadn't observed it up close enough. So when we, you know, early when we first turned on the cameras, almost immediately the comet had an outburst. It got bright. You could see the coma forming, a little tiny tail, and then it damped back down again. So, wow, that's just, it's amazing. It's amazing to be able to see this thing come to life. We think that it won't be so active that we can't continue with the landing. We're just going to go ahead and land. But it sure does make things interesting.
And when you land, you're gonna drill into that icy snowball?
Yes.
And then they've
got little ovens, so they'll drill into it and put the material on little ovens, and then they'll have a chance to kind of warm it up and sniff it. You know, the molecules that will drift up into the mass spectrometer will be identifiable. And there's other experiments that will be done with the ovens.
Yeah.
We've got the panoramic camera and a nadir pointed camera, because interestingly enough, it's we don't even know what they call the matrix, the soil of which the comet is made. Some people, you know, back in the day, the dirty snowball analogy, a snowflake has a kind of fractal, random patterns that make, and what if it really is a dirty snowball and you've got this sort of loosely conglomerated soil that's made out of fractal patterns. We really want to know what the structure of this thing is. So we've got a lot of exciting experiments.
And how long will it stay on the comet?
Well, indefinitely. Once it's down, it's not going to come back up.
Could it get blown off by the tail?
By the activity of the comet. That's actually an interesting idea, but I doubt it. I think that the lander is going to be too heavy for any, even though we call them jets on a comet, it's not like a jet engine on terrestrial atmospheric pressures. But we do have limits. Like I said, the solar panels will become covered with dust. And then also there's a thermal limit where as the comet goes around the sun, the lander will warm up too much to be able to be used.
Is there a comet cam we can watch along with you?
Yes. I think that the downward pointed camera, the landing camera, we'll all be watching that. And the panoramic camera, obviously, when we do land and they want to characterize the area on which we landed, we'll all be interested in that.
So we're actually going to be taking a ride through the solar system on the back of a comet.
Right, back of a comet. Absolutely right.
Kids talk, read about this stuff in books as if it were science fiction, and now it's actually going to happen. Yeah.
Our laboratory in space.
What's the optimal output or outcome of this mission?
We would like to know, really, in the end, so much about how the solar system formed and how water and life may have come to the Earth. So that we're looking for, I call it it's a bit like the forensic evidence that you gather at a crime scene. But instead of a crime scene, this is a birth scene. And we're interested in gathering all the forensic evidence that the comet might be able to tell us about the circumstances of the Earth's, the solar system's birth. Did oxygen get injected later? Is oxygen part of the original material of the solar system, or did we have a passing star that was in a certain phase and just spilled all this oxygen into our solar system? Because if you do a chemical analysis, you don't get, if you start with, you know, hydrogen and some raw materials, you kind of don't get Earth and Mars and, you know, it, with all the water that we have. And there's a lot of people who speculate that in order to have a solar system like we have, you have to have the injections of not only one but maybe two passing stars to pass on some of the chemicals that we see that make our the environment around us. So among the clues we'll be looking for are clues about where the oxygen may have come from and the timing of when oxygen injections, if they happened, when they might have happened. And those are all, I don't know, fascinating for me.
They're fascinating for all of us, Dr. Alexander. Thank you. We'll be watching. We'll be watching along with you.
Okay.
We wish you good luck.
Thank you very much. We'll need it.
Dr. Claudia Alexander is the project scientist for the U.S. Rosetta Project at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California.